So, random thought. Is the difference between flirting and sexual harassment in the workplace attraction? And I ask this because you sent me this article, right, about this police officer. And let's see. He had smacked a female police officer on the butt. He's called her sexy. This is not just one incident. He's done it a number of times, even sent her some pretty vulgar Facebook messages. And she said, yeah, well, no, she didn't want to file a complaint. So he's fine. He gets to keep his job. Every handbook I've seen and every we've been in a lot of these different meetings for, you know, sexual harassment and all these HR meetings we have to be in. It says even if it's not the person you are, it's directed towards, and it's somebody on the outside who just happens to be passing by. If they're offended by what you say or what you do, then that's sexual harassment. She didn't report him. Somebody else did. But now he gets off scot-free because she says, I don't want to file a complaint, and I'll work with him again tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, so that was an interesting story because, to your point, it was a third party that reported it. And so what they said is that he's not going to fall into disciplinary actions for what he did to this girl who's, they have a relationship, they're friends, supposedly just a platonic relationship. But so it doesn't mean that he might not get some type of HR documentation. We won't know that. But to your point, is it harassment if you are attracted to the person? You know, I think that's an interesting case because if someone I'm not attracted to is hitting on me at work, would I be bothered? Yes. But if it's someone I am attracted to, am I going to, you know, am I as upset? Maybe not. Now, you should never harass people at work, period, dot. Whether you're attracted to them or not, I mean, that's something that just shouldn't happen. But I'll admit, if, you know, Sloth from Goonies is looking at me, giving me the eye, yeah, I'm going to be like, I need to call HR real quick. Sloth in Cubicle 2 won't stop staring at me. But if next to him is Halle Berry sitting in the other cubicle, I'm just like, hey, Halle.
You know, it's funny because this is where these mixed signals come in, right? Because you hear these stories time and time again of these couples and they're like, yeah, well, you know, I really didn't like him a lot at first. But, you know, every day he'd put a note on my desk and, you know, it was cute. He did it for 2 months and then we went out on our first date. Well, if you didn't think he was attractive in the first place, right? And by the second day, you're like, look, motherfucker. You put one more goddamn note on my desk and I'm going to kick your ass.
No, I mean, it's unfortunately, I think there might be some truth to that, that, you know, you're not, and it depends on how far someone takes. There's a difference of, hey, you look nice today. You smell nice. And that type of deal compared to giving a coworker an extra long hug and going, you smell nice. Like that's creepy. You know, and that's right. And you keep doing it. You keep trying to touch on somebody. I mean, all that is wrong. But to your point, if you're attracted to the person that's doing it, do you let it slide? I know I have. And that doesn't make it right. I'm just saying I totally have been like, oh, they're just flirting. You know, it's cool. But then there's that one where I'm just like, I need you to understand. We work together. This is a place of work.
Listen here, Goody.
I didn't come here for that. I didn't come here today to deal with this. So I'm gonna give you one last chance before I go to HR.
Listen here, Goody Goo.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Welcome to the show. I'm Yanni Rude.
I'm just Terrell. You ever been at a bar and overheard two people having some crazy conversations?
You know, like this one. Well, we are those people and we've been having those crazy conversations since college.
Yes, this is Regular Guys Random Thoughts Podcast.
And, you know, it's been a great holiday weekend, but, and I know Thanksgiving, eating dinner probably made you smile, but what else made you smile this week?
You know, what made me smile this week was the Cowboys losing. And let me back up. It's not, I don't have any issue with the Cowboys. It's Cowboy fans. And so we were having dinner right around the same, the time the game started. And so, my dad recorded it. And so we all went off to a different room and you know, had dinner and all that. And then we came back to watch the game. And so it was cool because you can fast forward through the commercials and all that stuff. And I thought that was great. Now, I didn't check the score because I just want to see the game, right? Mm-hmm. And so as the game was going on, it was not looking good for the Cowboys. And so they scored. I think they got to like 34-16. And my dad goes, yeah, you know, I'm done with this game. He's ready to turn it. That's when I looked on my phone and saw the actual score was 41-16. I'm like, wait a minute. I think they score again. And he was like, no, I don't want to say. I'm like, come on. Don't you want to watch the whole game? Like, if you didn't record it, we'd watch the whole game, right? I want to see.
Such an
I want to see what happened. And just look in his face, just like, no. I just love that. Because, like, to me, that's just what a lot of Cowboy fans are like.
So did he, did losing, he go?
They get a little bitter.
You know what, Terrell? Bring me my belt.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny is I saw Marvin posted on Facebook and he said, for future reference haters, if I ask a question about the Cowboys, I'm talking to Cowboy fans only.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
Oh, they're so sensitive. Cowboy fans are so sensitive.
Hey, he's my boy. I don't mess with him. I don't talk trash on his Facebook when he posts about Cowboys. I got a few other Facebook friends. I just know I'm like, just don't even say anything. Just let it go. I got a friend of mine that every Cowboy loss, he's like, I'm not taking texts or phone calls for the next 24 hours. I've seen that meme up that he posts so many times this season that I feel bad for him. I just want to reach out and give him a little virtual hug and be like, come on, man, next year. Yeah, get back next year. You know,
next century. Next century. Y'all be okay. Yeah, I'm a 49ers fan first, ABD next. That's anybody but Dallas.
What about you? What made you smile?
What made me smile this week was this story that I saw. And what was interesting about the way this story was written, it was almost written like it's a, it's putting down the folks who do this, who participate in this, right? And it says, you know, like rich New Yorkers are paying people to stand in line to take COVID tests. And I'm going, yeah. Who wants to stand in line for 3-4 hours? If you have the money and you have the disposable income to pay somebody to stand in line and wait for you, why not? And as I read through the article, I realize here's where they're finding these people, right? They're not just grabbing the assistant, the intern, and going, all right, I know you're in your house, but get out your house and go do this. No, they're using the app TaskRabbit, right? Which is kind of like Thumbtack, and where you hire people, the independent contractors, to do whatever, whether it's fix something around your house, put in, you know, your ring at your front door, paint your house, whatever it is, right? You can have them do anything. Well, one of those things that they've listed is waiting in line for COVID tests. And as with people were trying to get tests done before flying to see family for Thanksgiving, this was a need. And I'm like, dang, that would have been a great hustle because people were charging up to $80 an hour. So imagine $80 an hour to stand in line for 3 hours. That's $240 that you can get. And if you're sitting at home doing absolutely nothing, why not?
Right. I mean, that's extra money on the side hustle. I mean, you could still, for those of us who work remote, as long as you have Wi-Fi, you get your hotspot, you can still be working and just sit in line and just move on up.
Yep.
And just sit there, just keep working and move on up. If you're a college student, you're studying for tests or anything like that, I think it's good money. I totally get how it'll piss people off.
Yeah.
Right? I totally get how it pisses people off. If you're in line for concert tickets and the person in front of you all of a sudden says, hey, come on up. And somebody in front of you, you're going to be instantly mad. And then they're trying to explain to themselves that, well, no, they were standing in line for me. You're going to be irritated, you know, but I get it, but I don't knock the hustle. I mean, if there's an opportunity to make some money legally, do it. There's nothing wrong with what they're doing. And if you can afford it, great. Now that could be the part where if you can't afford it, you're butt hurt and pissed.
Yeah.
But I don't see anything wrong with what these people are doing.
And it's not like somebody's cutting line because literally you're standing in place. So that position's there. It's taken. And then, okay, I'm two away from getting in. Okay, hey, come on in. And you take my place. And I get out the line because I wasn't here for the test. I was just here to hold the spot in line. So it's not like you're losing your spot. You're still one person behind. If you're behind me, you're still one person behind. So there's no need to be upset. And even for the people just reading the article or people who wrote the article, that I think wrote it with a little twist in it to try and make you feel that they were doing something in privilege for it. I'm like, if you have the money, I mean, shoot, look, I remember moving and the movers came to my house and like, yo, you don't have a lot of stuff. I'm like, no. And they go, you know, you and your homeboys could have moved this. You just got them a 12 pack of beer. I'm like, look, I moved this shit in here. I'm not moving it again. y'all take it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other difference is if my homeboys scratch up something, I can't hold them accountable.
Exactly.
You guys scratch up something.
Then there's that part.
Yeah. Yeah. Then there's that part. Yeah. But no, I think people just finding ways to get their feelings hurt.
Yeah.
Or to be butthurt about something. I just think it's dumb, but I don't think it's a bad idea. And they haven't even started doing the COVID lines yet, or for the vaccine. They haven't even started doing that stuff yet. So,
oh, that's another one. Because now I'll take it up to $150 because you want the vaccine. Oh, yeah. That's even, see, the way that people are finding ways to generate revenue and generate income, innovative ways, I love it. That makes me smile, yeah. Just because I love to see how people adapt. It's one of the things I told my team at the start of this. So in March, I'm like, those who survive this time period are the ones who are going to thrive when this is all said and done. So
yep.
What are you going to do with this time? You're at home. What are you going to do? Are you going to be able to build your own studio and home and be able to be self-sufficient and not have to, I got to go to the studio to do this. Can you produce the same quality content from home?
Yeah.
Because the world is changing. It's not going back to what it was in February of 2020. That's not happening.
Right.
And we just hit the turbo to go into 2023. It's just going to be 2021 when we blink. And
yeah.
We just got to be ready because obviously we've skipped past 21 and 22. And now we're in 2023. And are you ready to meet the challenges of the time?
And I think if you're going to be innovative and find some different ways to make money, that's your best bet right now, because you can't depend on, you know, all the jobs that we thought we could depend on.
Yeah.
You know, waiting tables, bartending, managing events, event coordinators. A lot of those, it's gone away because of the pandemic. And these people need to make some money. And obviously, we can't depend on our government to float us on money until a vaccine comes out. So do what you got to do. If it's legal, do it. There's nothing wrong with that. I think it's a great idea to stand in line. Not even just that, a bunch of other things that you could do. I think like if I would love to be able to pay somebody to fill out the paperwork for me when you go to the hospital. Like, you see how many different sheets you got to fill out. I mean, and you're filling out the same information.
Yeah.
If I could have somebody just, hey, meet me there. Here's my cards. Fill it out. I'm going to just sit here and just take a little nap till they call my name. Love that.
The older I get, the more I understand why people have personal assistants. Because I was always like, yeah, why would I want somebody doing that stuff? It's too close to me. And the more you have to do stuff, you're like, you know what? I'd rather pay somebody to do this shit.
Yeah. And there's so many things out there that people would pay for. I mean, you think of, was it a few years ago? I don't even say a few years ago. I'd probably say like closer to 10 years ago. You had the people that were doing the dog walking for you.
Yeah.
Making money doing that. You had people that would just go for walks with you. You just want someone to go for a walk with you.
Really?
Talk. Yeah. You have people who would do that. And wow. Just kind of like little rent a friend, you know, for the day. That's a way to make some money. It's not bad.
So it's the Disney gigolo, basically. The Disney version of the gigolo.
Okay. Yeah, I mean.
You're just walking for conversation. Yeah. We'll sing. We'll
yeah.
sing songs.
Yeah. You can be a paid walk and talker. You know, just going to walk and talk, $5, you know, a mile or something like that. Because honestly, think about it. You're just walking with a stranger, having a conversation. You could,
yeah.
It could be therapeutic. You can get some of your shit out to somebody who's not going to judge you. They're never going to see you again. That's why it's like you've been on a plane and somebody starts telling you stuff. I'm like, wow, this is really personal, but I get it. You're never going to see me again. So
Right. Yeah,
tell me your problems. I'll listen.
Yeah, sounds like spring break. same thing. Never going to see you again. you know, speaking of being innovative in COVID times, that's one of the things that Kevin Hart did with his new special, where he actually did the stand-up special in his house. Invited, had a few people over, had them socially distanced, and did a special in his house. Well, what happened from there was there were people who were very critical of Kevin Hart's No Fucks Given special that's on Netflix right now. Oh, is he still funny? And so Clubhouse, and if you don't know about Clubhouse, Clubhouse is in a beta stage. It's a new social media platform. It's an audio social media platform. And you have to get an invite to actually get in. You can join the waiting list, but you're basically stuck on the waiting list till somebody that you know gets you in. And it's using your phone number. And it's basically all phone conversation. Basically set up as a room. You're in a room. There are people on the stage. You can get invited onto the stage to speak. That's the only time you can speak. Then they can put you back in the audience. But they started a room that said, is Kevin Hart funny? And I was actually on the community town hall today and found out that there were 5,000 people in that room. Mm-hmm. They had originally planned to cap the room sizes at 1,000 because they didn't know what would be too much to crash the system. And they go, well, you know, we just figured out that 5,000 is not too much to crash the system. So they just figured that out because of this room that says, is Kevin Hart funny? And that was people in there asking about the special. And the fact that in the special, one of the things that a lot of women had issues with was the fact that he said his daughter had whole-like activities. She was doing whole-like activities.
Like
yeah. And they were like, well, how can he call his daughter a hoe in any way? Kevin Hart jumps into the room and joins the conversation. And then things started going sideways from there. Were you in the room at any point in time?
I got in it, but he was already gone by the time I got into it. And then I went to another room and listened to all these comedians and people talk about it. And it was very interesting to me to hear the passion behind some of these people about Kevin Hart's not funny. And I'm like, well, okay, let's just say I go to a restaurant and the food's not good. Mm-hmm. I don't need to create a room on Clubhouse and get a bunch of people to come in and talk about how bad the food is.
Right.
You just didn't like it. You know, that's fine. Kevin Hart, to me, his comedy has been the same. Mm-hmm. I watched the special. It wasn't that funny. It doesn't mean he's not funny overall. When you look at his body of work, it's just that wasn't funny. And I'm sure every comedian has told a joke that wasn't funny. They've all bombed. You know, every artist, rapper, musician, they've had bad nights. It just really wasn't that funny. I get what he was trying to do. You know, you're in a pandemic and it's a little bit different. You're not at a concert hall or Madison Square Garden. You're kind of at your house.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different, like getting your mind right mentally could be different. But so there was that aspect of it. The other thing that I liked is all these comedians that were chiming in, talking trash to the people who were trying to say negative things about Kevin Hart and what he said about his daughter. Because what a lot of the women in that group were saying that, you know, well, you called your daughter a hoe. And they're like, no, he didn't say that.
Yeah.
What he said was this, you know, and put it into context. Now, you taught me a long time ago when you got into radio about the concept of theater of the mind, right? And so that's always stuck with me for 20 years. And so now if I hear a comedian, it was like, I was at the mall the other day, in my mind, I'm like, bullshit. You know, it's just part of your joke.
Yeah.
And so what if Kevin Hart was just saying this and it was kind of like a joke kind of a thing? And a lot of the people in the group were like, well, what is he going to do if his daughter hears this one day? I'm like, I would hope that Kevin was like, hey, family, check this out. Here's some stuff I'm going to throw out. Heads up, you know, but I don't think he was calling his daughter a hoe or whatever. It was more of just a joke and just people got super offensive about it. I just think that's where we are in society. We find reasons to get offended. By something.
Yeah.
And like, if you don't like the comedian, turn it off. But I don't understand this. Let's create a room and let's get a whole bunch of noise going. And I think the people who were doing it were also people who are aspiring to be comedians, entertainers. And this is their way to try to take somebody else down and try to elevate themselves in some form of fashion. It was very entertaining on Clubhouse, just sitting there listening to this stuff and listening to people just go in, you know, with their passion. But I'm with you, man. I thought it was just ridiculous.
But it's so the thing about comedy is the best jokes are rooted in truth, right? And you think about your favorite comedian and the best jokes they've told over time, it usually is rooted in some form of truth. There's a part of it that's true, but then the rest of it is embellished because that's how you tell the story to make it funny. And the fact that it's one of the things that I think we do a lot, and it's I give you credit because you've never been one of those people to do it, which is take something out of context. But he called his daughter a hoe. No, he didn't. He said she was doing hoe-like activities. What you realize in there, and they had so many rooms that were formed over the next couple of days just discussing it because it was a great way to get people to follow you. And if you say something, then you think more people are going to follow you. And that's the problem with followers and social media is the goal is to get as many followers as possible. So if you're going to say something, and this is one of the things you see on Clubhouse, everybody's an expert. The other thing is I'm with you. I'm not a big Kevin Hart fan. And he even said this himself, in that his comedy's not for everybody. And I'm not saying I'm not a fan of his. I'm a fan of his in his interviews. I love his interviews. I think he's one of the most motivational people when you hear him talk, especially when he's on with the Breakfast Club. He's really talking about building his team up, you know, building wealth for himself and his family. And I find that stuff motivational.
Yeah.
Do I think his stand-up comedy is the best? No, he's not in my top five list, but I respect the hustle. I'm not going to knock him because I go, oh, it's not funny. It's not for me. It's not my cup of tea. Just like as we found out when Bill Burr was on SNL, he's definitely not everybody's cup of tea.
Yeah, no, he's not. Well, and the thing, these comedians had a really good point that some of the people that were saying that, well, he should have told it like this. If he didn't really mean it, he shouldn't have told it like this. And so they were asking them, well, are you a comic? Well, no, I'm not a comic. They're like, well, then shut up. And I totally agree with that. Because like I've never made fried rice. Never. Mm-hmm. So if I were to go to a restaurant and they make fried rice, I'm going to call the chef out. Hey, you did this wrong. What you should have did was this. I've never made it. I have no idea what goes in that and how to make it the correct way. But I'm going to critique him on how he made it. And if you don't like a comic, you didn't like his joke, you didn't like it. Mm-hmm. But don't try to say, well, he should have said whatever, because I think that's wrong, too. If you don't know that craft, you don't know the art and skill that goes into doing those things, mm-hmm. don't talk about it. Right. I don't know how to build a carburetor, you know, but. If I go to a mechanic and I'm like, hey, actually what you should do is you should take that. I don't know. I'm just hoping he does it right. You know, but for the people that were just that passionate and trying to critique Kevin and say how he should have told the joke better was just ridiculous.
I laugh because you struck a nerve with me on that. Cause you know how many people are like, well, what y'all should do in programming? I'm like, yeah, everybody knows how to do my job until it's time to do my goddamn job. If you sit in my chair, here, take the keys. Now you do it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got a lot of people, even in my industry, that, you know, recruiters should do this. You know, you don't really know. Well,
right.
Well, I've interviewed people before. Okay, how many people have you interviewed? Three. Awesome. I've interviewed hundreds of people, and that's not how that goes, the way you describe the three people that you interviewed for your job. Right. So, yeah, I don't think you should be that type of person that's going to try to tell someone else what their industry, what their craft, what their art should be, and how they should do it. Just say, hey, this is what I like to hear. And great, you find those comedians that say and talk about the things that you like. There are a lot of great comedians out there. And some of them, I'm like, they're good. I don't like it. I mean, I'm not going to watch it. I'm not into the, you know, your Kramers and all those. Even when Jim Carrey did stand up, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
But Jim Carrey on Living Color was hilarious, you know? And so for me, that was my thing. But again, just because you don't like something, to go to this platform and try to get a whole bunch of other people to not like it, to me, is equally as bad as, wow, this smells bad. Smell this. <It's>
And I give to Kevin Hart's credit in his defense, I love the fact that he went in the room and he told people this, like, hey, if you don't like it, if you don't like my comedy, that's fine. It's not for you. He goes, Bon Jovi, one of the biggest artists ever. I can't tell you one Bon Jovi song. Bruce Springsteen, one of the biggest rock stars ever. I can't name one Bruce Springsteen song. I mean, I can, but he couldn't. And he goes, it's okay because his music isn't for me and it's fine. Right. He's not worried about it. Just like I'm not worried the fact that it's not for you and it's okay. And so I like the fact that he took it head on. And I think, you know, there was a lot of, oh, well, maybe it's a marketing ploy because maybe he's investing in Clubhouse. And it could be because it definitely got a lot of buzz over the weekend. And there are not a lot of people who know about Clubhouse. And this is probably the introduction, as it's gone from 80,000 last week to over 100,000 this week. And when they first started, I think it was only like 10,000 people. So this is going through, again, it's beta stage. They're working out a lot of the kinks. And I think in 2021, it's probably going to go public. And that's going to be something that we'll all be talking about at some point. Matter of fact, we'll probably have regular guys, random thoughts up there at some point, open live forums on there at some point. But speaking of comedians and what you can tell comedians to do, one of the things we've seen in the last week is a comedian telling people what to do to help him. And I'm talking about Dave Chappelle. He put out this 18-minute bit on Instagram. And I love the fact that they're able to now just put the content out. Creators are able to just put content out to the fans, directly to the fans. When I looked at it, it was over 5 million views on Instagram already. 18 minutes of him sitting down on stage and telling his story of why he wanted Chappelle's Show off Netflix and why Netflix removed it. Did you see this?
I did. I did. And I totally appreciate where he's coming from. I totally agree with where he's coming from. But you know me.
I knew there was a but. I knew.
Yeah, you know me. You signed a contract. Now, your legal team, maybe they weren't as strong back then. You might not have known Chappelle's Show was going to blow up the way it did. But you signed a contract. And in that contract, you know, HBO could do whatever they wanted with it. Even though you
didn't Comedy Central.
Want
it to. Comedy Central. It wasn't HBO.
No. I think it was HBO Max is what it went on that he wanted to get taken off of. And so Netflix, he called them directly and asked them to take it down. And they did, out of respect, which makes sense because they're going to make a whole lot of money off of him, you know, in future shows. They already have. You know, but for his issue with HBO having it on there, HBO Max, I'm like, dude, it's kind of in the contract. I mean, that's nice to Netflix, but that's just the price you pay if, you know, in your contractual agreements. And so it sucks that they can air this and you don't make one penny on it, but it's kind of what you signed up for.
I get why he doesn't want it. I mean, I get it on all sides. But to your point, he did sign up for that. And Comedy Central, who he actually did the show through and who has the contract, they can sell it to whoever they want to. I get the beef with HBO, though. And I understand why that grates him to the core. Because in Unforgiven, he talks about the fact that he actually pitched Chappelle's Show to HBO first. Not to Comedy Central. HBO not only said no, but they said, what do we need you for? And kicked him out of the offices. Now, he says they carried him out, and maybe that could have been the case. Maybe they just escorted him out. All right, thank you for coming by. What do we need you for? Get your ass out. It could have been a lot kinder than what he said. Again, he is a comedian. He does know how to tell
exactly.
A story. He's a great storyteller. So he knows how to tell the story, and this is in his sense. But regardless of how it is, they said no to the show. He took the show somewhere else. The somewhere else didn't pay him as much, but he was set up to make more money later. When it was set up to make more money, and this is where I understand his beef with Comedy Central as well. They set up to pay him $50 million. Everybody goes, that's great. And then he walks away from it. And he tells why he walks away from it. It was a bit that he was doing, and somebody just laughed. Not too loud, not too long. It's just the way they laughed, he went, this shouldn't be this funny to you. Which was the issue I had with Chappelle's Show from the very beginning. Because Chappelle's Show was basically for a white audience. And it was very, very heavy. And to me, that's where I had the issue, right? I think he just came to that realization a little bit later when the money was given and it all of a sudden became, all right, dance, boy. And he was like, wait a minute. And so he stepped away. The issue he had with them was also that they painted him as crazy because he didn't say anything. And so they made it seem like he was crazy. And that almost destroyed him. But he recovered. So good for him. And Netflix, you're right, did a great job. And they didn't have to take it down, but they know they're going to make more money with him. And so HBO is never going to take it down because they're like, well, you're not going to do a deal with us later. So hell with it. We're going to make our money off this.
Yeah. And I remember watching the Chappelle Show and it was great comedy. It was some of the topics he had. It was edgy, right? And his comedy is still the same. He still says the N-word as much as he wants.
Yeah.
Right. And you could totally do that. That's great. But again, you signed that contract. So at that time you were okay with the fact that Comedy Central could sell that to anybody that they want, and you're not going to make any money off of it. It's unfortunate. It sucks. But I'm totally against when artists do that. Like, you know, you signed up the deal, did it. Now you blew up. And whatever you did blew up, maybe at the time you signed, you didn't know what you had. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you signed that stuff away. Well, then it winds up growing. Same for us. Let's say if our podcast winds up growing to be something and there's some big sponsor that's like, hey, we want to do this. And we're just like, wow, you know, you got to give us how much? $10,000. Sure. And we sign. The next thing you know, they're able to sell that to other groups. Well, that's you. That's our bet.
Mm-hmm.
We mad at them all we want to, but that's our fault that we signed it. So I just think you signed for it. It sucks. Deal with it. Now, you can totally encourage people to watch it over there, but they're still going to.
I'm not crying for Dave on this, but I get where he's coming from. And I understand the pain, especially with HBO when they said no first.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you on that. And I think there's a lot of times people have said no. And sometimes you should have listened to them. You know, in the case of some athletes this week.
All right, which one do you start with? Because there's so many ways to go as we get into the for the sport of it. There's so many ways to go. Are we going with the main event or the co-main event?
Let's go with the co-main event because he should have said no. And I'm talking about Nate Robinson, three-time NBA slam dunk champion, phenomenal athlete.
Mm-hmm.
He had way more to lose to go into that fight with, what was his name? Is it
Jake Paul?
Yeah. Jake Paul.
Mr. TikToker, Mr. So YouTube.
They do this boxing deal, and it's supposed to be 8 rounds, 2 minutes, you know, a round.
There's only 2 minutes, too?
I believe so. Because I can't imagine why theirs would be. I mean, Nate's never boxed. So right. Why would his be longer than Mike Tyson's and Roy Jones? But let's just say if it was. If I'm wrong, I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the first time Jake's put on gloves.
No.
Jake has boxed. He's done this. He already had one fight under him. Now, how many times he's gotten in the ring and practiced? Who knows? Nate Robinson, 3 months ago, put gloves on for the first time and thought he was going to go win and fight this dude and got mollywopped in the second round. Got knocked out. I mean, it wasn't just the takedowns because he got knocked down twice. Yeah. And even watching that, I'm just like, oh, Nate, stay down, baby. Stay down. It was that last knockout where he went down just like, what's his name? Apollo Creed. I mean, it was just a... hit the ground hard. And I was like, oh man, like you should not have gotten that ring. That shit was, it was hilarious. Kudos for him for still doing it because I know I wouldn't get into the ring, but he got knocked the hell out. That shit was funny.
Let me say this first of all. 3 minutes in the ring is a long time. Even if you're in with somebody who is just sparring with you and not really trying to take your head off, it's 10 times longer when somebody's in there trying to knock your head off. So you've got to defend yourself and you're trying to hit them. When you step in that squared circle, you've got to have that killer instinct. And I've done training with title boxing. I've done training with UFC and I've been in the octagon. I've been in the ring. Look, one little thing and stars just start flying everywhere. It looks so easy on TV, man. I swear to you, it looks so easy on TV that you're just like, yeah, I can do that. And it's easy to say that. When you get in there, it's a lot worse. And you can see he was doing straight street fighting, trying to rush in, and Jake Paul did what he was supposed to do. Step to the side, catch him with a hook. And it's... The thing about this is, though, and I saw this, and tell me if you saw this, when he got knocked down the first time and the ref is trying to give him some extra time, I'm like, are you okay? Are you good? Are you okay? Walk this way. And he's walking. He's like, you hit me in my head. He walks down the whole side of the ring, comes back up, and he's like, give me your gloves. He puts one glove forward. He's like, no, both gloves. Like, do you want to continue? And the look on Nate's face, he wanted to go, nah, bro, I'm good. But but pride kicked in. He's like, no. Yeah, I want to continue. He didn't want to continue.
It'd totally be worse if he'd have quit. He just wasn't his element. I mean, if you're going to try to do something like that, you got to train for a long time. And to your point, like, I've never been in the ring. I've never been in the octagon. Mm-hmm. I've done 2 boxing workouts. My cousin Mark, I worked out with him years ago one time. I thought I was going to freaking die. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And we didn't even go 3 minutes. I was just like, you gotta be kidding me. And then I had another friend of mine named Will that used to train me a few years ago. And we decided to go out to Town Lake in Austin and we're doing like a little sparring workout where you have the pads and all that. I couldn't make that. Like, and we weren't even doing 3 minutes. I think it might've been barely a minute and a half or so where we would go and just have to keep going. I was done. I'm laying there on the grass. Just like, I can't do this. So to see the fact that Nate and him got in there and did that, great. But the other thing it makes me respect is the main card on that was Tyson and Roy Jones. Because again, they did 2 minutes. I can't do 2 minutes. And these dudes are in their 50s. So much respect to them.
Okay. So 2 things on that though. And we gotta be aware that as we say that we respect them, they're 54 and 51. Yes. They've done this for a career. So they've trained for the 3 minutes. Now, I think they gave both sides of it. One of, yes, I've done this for my entire life and I can do this still. And the other is like, shit, why did I sign up for this? Because after the first round, Roy Jones looked like, you know, I got to go back seven more times. I said Mike hit hard, but God damn.
Yeah, I think I might have made a mistake. Yeah, well, I mean, just the fight alone, because everybody was expecting, I think, Tyson to go in there and knock him out. And I'm like, it's an exhibition fight. There's no winner. Everyone's going to get a ribbon at the end of this. Why would Mike do that? Knowing that he's probably a much powerful hitter than Roy Jones. The other thing was all the buildup to the training Mike has done. The dude lost 100 pounds.
Yeah.
Right? And I think the story that's not told enough, it's what that fight did for him. And it was more about the excitement, the energy of being in the ring. Wasn't so much knocking somebody out, but to go where he was in such a dark place of being depressed, suicidal thoughts, and all that, to saying, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to lose 100 pounds and get his mind back where it needed to be. That's huge. And for the fact that Mike Tyson, someone who we all know slayed people, to see that person be vulnerable and say, yeah, I've been depressed. I've thought about suicide and all that. I mean, no one would think somebody that strong would do that. We all have a struggle, but to see where he came from and to where he's at now and how good he looked. I mean, he looked like a young Mike Tyson, you know, again in that ring at the age of 54. There's no way in the world I'd still get in the ring with him. I don't know what Roy was thinking. Mm. I hope that money was good to pay for them ribs that he got busted up in.
He's probably sitting next to Drew Brees right now. How many you got broken? But, you know, here's the thing about that. And tell me if you saw this, because I don't know if my eyes were deceiving me or, you know, my TV just decided, hey, let me fix this a little bit. Because when Mike walked to the ring, first of all, when Roy Jones walked to the ring, he was walking like an old basketball player, you know. Especially used to call it stepping on peanuts, because the way he was walking down to the ring, I was like, yeah, boy, this is gonna be something. And then Tyson walks down, he gets in the ring and he takes the shirt off, and Tyson looked old. I was like, dang, Tyson is old. But then the fight went on, and after the fight, I swear to you, Mike's muscles were bigger, Mike looked bigger, Mike looked more toned. He looked like he had lost 10 years in that ring. Like all of a sudden the adrenaline rushed and he went, hey.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute. The Mike that I saw in the post-fight interview was not the one who took his shirt off in the ring. Like, did he have a body double? Did they put somebody else out there? Because that guy was refreshed. That guy was all toned and ready to go. He looked like he was ready to go. And all right, Jake Paul, let's do this.
Yeah.
Let me show you how this is really done.
Yeah. Notice Jake Paul didn't call out Mike Tyson, though, did he? Called out Conor McGregor. He's not going to call out Mike. But no, you're right. I mean, he did. When they first started and they, you know, they took their deals off, you're like, yeah, y'all look like a couple old men. Mm-hmm. Or as Snoop Dogg says, look like two of my uncles in the back at a backyard barbecue getting into a fight. But they did look bad. The difference is at the end of those eight rounds, Mike looked younger, looked fit. Yeah. Roy looked like an old man that just got whooped, but Mike looked great. And then even his press conference, and I think that comes with a lot of maturity and just where he's at in his life. But, you know, listening to him talk about what the strategy was and the whole deal, it was very entertaining, enlightening. And then they had the part where you had Roy Jones Jr. and Tyson together. And I think they just got out the ring.
Yeah.
Tyson's just feeling like Tyson could win five more rounds. He felt refreshed.
Yeah, he was
Roy Jones. Because they put the camera on Roy, was like, yeah, you know, I just, it's just, woo.
And yeah, I could feel the power. He could hit hard. Yeah. And Mike's like, yeah, but you took that. You took that, and I respect that.
And then Mike was like, oh no, I'm definitely going to do it again. And he is too. We got to do this again. And Roy was just like, yeah, I don't know. Roy was not ready to say, yeah, let's do a rematch. Not at all. But I would love to see Tyson fight again. You know, I mean, he's not going to, you know, be the next heavyweight champion again or anything like that.
Oh, yeah, no.
But I just think his story and what boxing does for him, and how it just the you would think the art of fighting was about him punishing somebody. And think the young Mike, maybe that's what he was about. But this Mike didn't seem like that. It was more about the competition, the love of the sport.
Yeah,
I'm happy for him. I thought it was a win, even though it was a draw. And my favorite quote is Roy Jones Jr. When they're like, how do you feel about being a draw? He's like, well, I wear draws. I don't do them. So I'm not happy about it.
And he knows it wasn't a draw. And when you saw the scoring, you're like, as the scoring was, as the match was going on, you're like, okay, yeah, they're setting this up to be a draw. They're not going to have a win or lose. One thing that I didn't know is that people were saying, you know, well, Snoop needs to call, needs to commentate every boxing match. I'm like, no, he doesn't. He was as entertaining as he was. The worst thing to hear was in the middle of the fight, get in there, Roy, get in there. I'm like, that's why I don't watch boxing matches with people who do that shit. So I don't have to listen to that crap.
But Snoop was so hilarious. Did you hear him when Nate Robinson got knocked down? If he got knocked down the first time, Snoop was like, oh, precious Lord, take my hand.
I will say though, Snoop had a lot of good quotes that night. But the best, and they were, you know, of course, the memes were out real fast. The whole Simba memes and the boys in the hood.
Yeah.
They had so many memes, but I thought the best one I saw so far, which wasn't a meme, it was just a quote tweet, right? So Steph Curry had sent out some words of encouragement to Nate Robinson prior to the fight. And Nate Robinson said, gonna shock the world, bro. And Scotty Beam quote tweeted him and goes, we got to be specific with our manifestations. And I swear to you, I cried the first time I read that because it's he did shock the world.
He did.
Just not the way he wanted.
He did. He sure did shock the world. Now, the crazy part is you got Jake Paul calling out Conor McGregor. So I would love to see that exhibition just to see Jake get his mouth knocked in.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, just... it's one thing that's great. You're feeling good about yourself, but dial it back with Conor McGregor. You're not there.
Yeah, Nate didn't know what he was doing. So, he's at least we know he's alive and breathing. He's good. We saw him get up in the ring, but he also posted on Instagram, so thanking people, and he did it for a good cause. But yeah,
but then you have the Macy's Day Parade.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And which still happened. And even though they still had it, it was a lot of it was pre-recorded. So you had a lot of people in New York who still tried to go watch live in a pandemic.
Don't understand why.
And were disappointed. But you had the lovely ladies of Zeta Phi Beta that were actually out there stepping.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Macy's announcers or the way they tweeted it, what they call it, the...
So I'm pulling it up right now because it was actually on their Twitter. They tweeted it,
yeah.
And they said, and it's interesting because we found this story on Fox News of all places. but the tweet from Macy's was, "What's that sound, you ask? Why, it's the diverse dance group Zeta Phi Beta Steppers performing a special routine they put together to help us celebrate this unprecedented year."
Yeah.
Diverse
dance group. That's sorority. With a lot of history and a lot of involvement in the community and a lot of great leaders that they produce. But I get it. Now, I will say this, though. Did it bother me? Am I in team like Macy's is wrong? No, because they probably don't always know. You and I, we're both in fraternities. Yeah. We understand what stepping, we've known it, we've done it, you know, so we totally get it. Everybody still does it, right? And it's okay. There are a lot of colleges and universities that don't have historically black fraternities and sororities on campus. Some of them have never seen a step show before.
Right.
They don't know what it is, right? And everybody watched Stomp the Yard, and even that was crap. but not everybody sees it. And so I'm like, why get upset about this? Just, hey, they made a mistake. And then they corrected it. They sent out another tweet later after they got called out for it. But I'm like, it's not that big a deal.
And they did. The second tweet was like, congratulations again to our centennial steppers who performed in the Macy's Day Thanksgiving Parade this year. You all were hashtag finer and represented Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated well. Now, I will say this, though. One of the first step shows I went to when we were at UTSA was up the road in, I want to say it was in San Marcos, right? And I remember when the Zetas came up, they won that step show. They didn't touch the stage once. And if I had to describe what they did that night, it was a diverse dance group. I'm not going to lie. They party strolled all the way to the front of the stage. They were fine as hell. But they did not you know, we've been to a number of step shows. You see it especially when the Deltas get on stage and they throw down, because sororities, they step harder sometimes than a lot of the guys. Yep. And we've seen that happen where some sororities step harder than some fraternities, depending on where you actually go see the show. But man, if this was the routine they did, I could understand the confusion. You know, not everything is a slight sometimes. And you're right, they're probably just culturally clueless.
Right.
And that's all part of it. I do like the fact that they took time to kind of educate them and didn't make that big a deal out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Very true. And I think if you watch it, this wasn't like, you know, the undergrad Zeta Phi Beta sorority from Howard. You know, these were alums, right? And with alums, I don't know if you've done a step show as an alum, you don't step as hard as you used to. You don't go as crazy and all out as you used to. So maybe somebody might have thought that was a diverse dance group. But regardless, they got it fixed. Like, we're in a pandemic. There's other shit to really make a big deal out of. I just felt like that really wasn't a big deal. I saw the tweets of people like, how could you not? I'm like, they didn't do their research. It's okay. Let's just let that one go too.
I will say, I have seen some people who are well past their prime try to step as hard as they did when they were in college. 99.9% of the time, they're cues, and they look like Roy Jones after the first round. About to pass out in the corner. Like, you know you can't do that. Stop it. You ain't that young no more. Stop it.
No. I remember I can't remember the last time I stepped, but I knew I was done. I was at a party and I'm like trying to go around and stroll. I could barely make one lap. I was like out of breath, tired. I'm like, yeah, I think I'm good. I think I'm gonna hang these up. I think the last step show I did might have been like 2008. Yeah, that was it. And haven't even tried. Every now and then, you know, you've been sipping on something nice and you got music playing and you're in your kitchen, you hear a song that brings you back to college, and you're like, oh shoot, da-da-da. And as soon as you try to make that little move, you're like, oh,
see,
throw your back out, you're like, yeah, I'm good.
You're an alpha, I'm a kappa. We don't do all that hopping around like y'all do. So,
well, I mean, you could do this till you're, you know, till you're 70. Exactly. Anybody can do
we're
this.
Meant for we're meant for longevity.
Anybody can do this all day long. Like, big deal. That ain't no fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, all right, Roy Jones. Well, that's why we looking like Mike Tyson after the fight, and y'all looking like Roy Jones after the first round.
All right. And 30 years from now, I'm going to see you walking with a cane. I'll be like, all right, twirl that shit down. Yeah. Where you at?
I bet you I don't drop it, though.
If you do, you'll be on the ground.
Oh, my God. Let's get out of here.
What you sipping on today?
Well, you know, I know your lady has started decorating the house, and so has my wife. You know, the tree's up. I've got reindeer all over the place and tinsel. So, in the spirit of the holidays, I've got some eggnog made with some Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey.
Yeah, yeah.
And it opens a lot easier than WAP, by the way.
Because you can handle that. You can handle that one. I'm doing Basil Hayden. I felt it was a good little holiday whiskey. Now that's getting a little colder over here in this neck of the woods. Kristen told me to tell you that she did put up her tree and her decorations without my help. So
this year.
Yeah. She put it all up. Didn't need my help. I was over there and I was like, hey, baby, need any help? She's nope. I was like, cool.
Sit your Grinch ass over there. I don't need you fucking up my tree.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
She didn't want me doing anything. Don't mess it all up.
I'm Yanni Rood.
And I'm Just Terrell.
Follow us at Yanni Rood, at Just Terrell, at RGRTPod.
Yeah, send us some of your random thoughts or some of your bullshit.
It's the Regular Guys Random Thoughts Podcast. Cheers.
Cheers.